Parshas Yisro tells us the story of Yisro, and I'm trying to figure out a little bit who Yisro is, what drives him, and we know different information about Yisro, but try to put it together perhaps to create a picture of who he was. We know he's Moshe's father-in-law, we know he's a priest in Midian, he comes to convert, Chazal tell us that he was one of Paro's senior advisors. So who is this person and what pushed him to eventually convert to Judaism? So I think we look at a few questions pertaining to the beginning of the parasha. Hopefully we'll shed light on one basic midah that Yisro had, which drove him in all his pursuits. The Torah tells us, the beginning of the parasha, Vayishma Yisro Kohen Midyan Chosein Moshe, Eisko Asher Asar Elokim LeMoshe O Yisro Lamo, Ki Osi Hashem Et Yisro Mimitzrayim. Yisro heard. Who was Yisro? Again, he was a priest in Midian, he was a father-in-law of Moshe, and he heard everything that happened that Hashem did for Moshe and for Bnei Yisrael, that he had taken them out of Mitzrayim. So Rashi's bothered, quoting from Chazal, Vayishma Yisro. What was it that Yisro heard? Mashmua Shama Uba. What was it that prompted Yisro to come? What did he hear? Rashi says, he heard about Kriyas Yamsuf, he heard that Hashem had split the sea for Bnei Yisrael to save them. He had helped them in fighting against Amalek. And this is what caused them now to come. And the Gemara, in fact, has a third opinion that he heard about Matan Torah. They heard the Torah was given to Bnei Yisrael, and that was what prompted him to come. And the questions that begin are, What are Chazal bothered by? Why does Rashi need to ask the question, Mashmua Shama Uba, quoting from Chazal? The Torah told us, Vayishma Yisro, Eiskol Asher Asal Okim LeMoshe. Yisro heard what happened, what Hashem did for Bnei Yisrael. So why does that require asking the question, Mashmua Shama? What did he hear? The Torah already told us what he heard. Why is it that Rashi, again, quoting from Chazal, and Chazal needed to zero in on a specific event? Furthermore, again, this idea of Yisro Choing Midian, so how are we looking at Yisro? Are we looking at him in a positive light? Are we looking at him in a negative light? It seems to be that referring to him as the Choing Midian, as being the high priest for Avodah Zarah, would be derogatory. And on the other hand, referring to him as Chosein Moshe is a tremendous yichus for Yisro. So which one is it? It seems to be a little bit of a contradiction in terms of what message the Torah is trying to get across. So why was it? Again, the simple reading of the pasuk is Vayishma Yisro. Yisro heard what happened. He heard what happened that Hashem took them out of Mitzrayim. So what would that include? That would include all the makos. That would include all the nisim that Hashem did just in simply taking Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. So why was that not enough? Why would that not have been enough to cause Yisro to come to convert, to come to Judaism? So the Maharal explains that it couldn't have been the Makos alone, because the Makos basically took approximately 1 year in order for the entire process to go through. Between all the different times that Moshe came, Moshe gave a warning, the Makah came, Paro said he would let them go, first get rid of the Makah, back and forth. It ended up taking a year for all this to happen. So what was it that prompted Yisro to come specifically right now? He already had a lot of time to have come. He had this entire year. So it was not enough for him to have just heard simply about the Makos. Now, why weren't the Makos enough? So when the Makos began, why wasn't that enough? So what the Maharal explains is that Yisro tried to view everything in a holistic manner. He tried to look at the entire picture. And just as the Egyptians, the Khartoumim of Paro, the Egyptians, the witchcraft, the people that were with Paro, kept saying by the Makos that it's Etzba Elokim Hi, it reflected one aspect of Hashem's being God over the entire world. It wasn't the Yad of Hashem, it was an Etzba, the same way a finger is part of a hand. It wasn't the entire hand of Hashem, but it was Hashem attacking specific individuals for specific things that they had done. And just seeing the Etzba Elokim wasn't enough. That didn't hit home with Yisro enough to prompt him to come to convert to Judaism, it had to have been a larger event. What were those larger events? So then we have our three opinions, which we'll try to analyze a little bit more as we go on, of Kriyas Yamsuf, Muhammad Amalek, and the Aseret HaDibros, the giving of the Torah. Not to get into too much detail with what the Maharal explains, but the Maharal does try to show how each of those events showed that Hashem has full reign over a specific area, whether it's full reign over the land, full reign in the heavens, or the fact that the Torah encompasses everything. Those were three events that Yisro was able to view in a holistic manner, and those things were able to prompt Yisro to come back. But there are others that suggested other approaches as well. One approach is that the makos that were brought and the entire process of Yetzias Mitzrayim could simply be viewed as retribution against people who had wronged Bnei Yisrael. People had done something wrong and now Hashem was punishing them. And we could even see the Midah Keneged Midah in a lot of what was done. But basically it was divine retribution for what had happened. And it wasn't that, it was nothing that showed a special relationship between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael. It simply was Hashem punishing people who had acted improperly. And that wasn't enough. That didn't show the uniqueness of Klal Yisrael. That showed perhaps that there was one God who was running the show, but that wasn't enough to convince Yisrael to become part of the Jewish people. That didn't reflect the uniqueness of Klal Yisrael. But these three events that took place, Kriyas Yamsuf, Melchemes Amalek, and Matan Torah, were all three events where Hashem acted to Bnei Yisrael as a whole because they were Bnei Yisrael. When the Mitzrim were pursuing them, the fact that Hashem did the miracle in such a wondrous way and did it in a way that showed the entire world, these were things which pointed to the uniqueness of Klal Yisrael. And when it went beyond just being a God who's in charge of everything, it went to the point of showing that Klal Yisrael, that the Jewish people are unique. That was something which Yisro was able to respond to. That was something which Yisro was able to understand. And that was enough to trigger his reaction of wanting to become part, wanting to join Klal Yisrael. We'll have to get back to this point, but one specific point that we do need to address, which is that according to the opinion, and perhaps this is why Rashi didn't mention that opinion, but according to the opinion that Vayishma Yisro, Yisro heard about Matan Torah, so Matan Torah happened after this, just in terms of the Parshios HaTorah. At the beginning of Parshios Yisro, now a little later on, we're going to read about the Aseret HaDibros in the beginning of the Torah. So why would it be that the Torah would put what Yisro heard prior to the event taking place? The other two happened in Parshas B'Shalach. Amalek was the last Parsha immediately preceding this by Yishma Yisro. And the Kriyas Yamsuf was in the beginning or towards the middle of Parshas B'Shalach. So both of those things, it makes sense where we place Parshas Yisro and Yisro hearing about those events. But why would it be, if the event that we're referring to is Matan Torah, why would it be that the Torah placed this event? Again, the fact that the Torah has things which go out of chronological order is accepted, at least by most of the Rishonim. So that in and of itself, that in Mukta Mumukha Bar Torah, isn't so bothersome, but why would it be that in this case the Torah chose to place this Parsha beforehand and not when it happened sequentially later on in the Parsha? And I think the key to trying to understand all of this is the question that we raised earlier is, in what light are we viewing Yisro? Do we view Yisro in a positive light or viewing him in a negative light? When we refer to him as Kohen Midyan, it seems to be highlighting a negative aspect to his persona, the fact that he was involved in Avodah Zarah. And on the other hand, right, immediately afterwards, we call him Chosein Moshe. We refer to him as the father of Moshe, which seems to be a praise for him. So how do we view Yisro? So the Torah says earlier, in Perek Vav, in Pasuk Chatei, talking about Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, the Torah says that Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen took for a wife Mibinos Putiel. Perek Vav, Pasuk Chatei, the Torah says, Ve'Elazar ben Aaron lakach lo Mibinos Putiel lo li'ishav atir lo et Pinchas. So Elazar, who was Aaron's son, took a wife from the daughters of Putiel, and their son was Pinchas. So who was Putiel? So we know from the beginning of this week's parasha that Rashi tells us that Yisro had seven names. One of the names of Yisro was Putiel. What does Putiel mean? So Rashi, in Perek Vav, commenting on Mibinos Putiel, says, Mizera Yisro, Shepite Magolim La Avodah Zarah. That she was a descendant, she was a daughter of Yisro. And what was Yisro? He was the one who fattened the animals that would be brought to the Avodah Zarah. He made sure that the korbanos, the sacrifices that were brought for Avodah Zarah, were the best possible korbanos possible. And then he said something else also. Who else does it refer to? Also Mizera Yosef. He also came from Yosef. That was another ancestor of this, of the wife of Elazar. Shepitpet B'Yitzro. Yosef, who overcame his Yitzhara when it came to Ashes Potiphar. So it seems very strange. Yitzhar had seven names. Why, when we're talking about Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, who certainly seems to be a tzaddik, certainly seems to be one of the leaders of the generation, why would it be that the Torah chose to use the name of Yisro, which implies the fact that he was involved in Avodah Zarah, that he fattened the cows for Avodah Zarah? There are many other names that the Torah could have chosen from. And certainly to use the same word to connote two opposite ideas, the fact that on the one hand, she was a daughter of Yisro, who fattened the cows for the Avodah Zarah, and on the other hand, a descendant of Yosef, who was such a tzaddik, known as Yosef at tzaddik, for the fact that he overcame his Yetzer Hara when it came to Ashes Potiphar. So it just seems very strange that the Torah would use the same word for both of these ideas. And I think the answer to this is the key to our entire discussion, is to try and figure out what Yisro was all about. One of my rabbis once suggested that in fact both of the names of Yisro and both of the comments that Rashi makes in terms of where Mibinos Putiel, where she came from, were both in fact compliments. Even the fact that he was Mefatein, that he fattened the cows for the Avodah Zarah, was a compliment. How so? Chazal tell us, this is quoted by the Mefarshim in our Parsha, that Yisro went and he was Oved Kol Avodah Zarah Sheba Olam. Every single religion in the world, he went and he worshipped and he was part of that religion until ultimately he came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he came to the Jewish people. The difference between Yisro and between other people was that Yisro was going from Avodah Zarah to Avodah Zarah, constantly seeking the truth. And whatever he did, and this is what this Chazal is highlighting, whatever he did, he put his all into it. Because he had the pure intent of trying to find truth. When he was being Oved Avodah Zarah, when he brought the Karbanos to the Avodah Zarah, he was Mefatein the Agalim Avodah Zarah. He himself went, and he made sure to actively be involved, and he fattened up those cows. He said, if I'm going to try this Avodah Zarah, if I'm going to see if this Avodah Zarah has truth to it, then I need to be fully involved. I need to put up myself into it, and I'm going to fatten up and make sure that the Karbanos that I brought to Avodah Zarah are the best possible Karbanos. And similarly, in our Parsha as well, Kohen Midyan, when he came to worshiping together with the people in Midyan, he didn't just sit there, he wasn't another person in the congregation, he wasn't another person who was involved, but he was the priest. He made sure that he gave every single religion that he tried to feel out, tried to search out, he gave it his all. And that was the midah that Yisro had. Yisro had this midah of emes, of looking for truth and searching for truth in everything that he did. And that, in fact, works very well with the fact that Yosef was mefatei to Yisro. It was a very difficult situation, but he saw the truth. He understood. He saw the mustiot no shalavi. He saw what Yaakov represented. Emes to Yaakov. He saw that there was a certain truth and that there was a reality that he needed to perform, and he needed to step up to the situation, and he made sure to do that. And that's why we highlight the fact that he was Mefatein the Agol Avodah Zarah, because that was Yisro. Yisro was the person who was constantly looking for the truth in all his pursuits in life. And I think this might explain, it's a very strange mechilta. A few parashios ago, when Moshe married the daughter of Yisro, so the mechilta says that Yisro made Moshe promise him that his first son he was going to give to Avodah Zarah. And the Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu agreed. And all of my partners try to figure out, what did Yisro want? Why did Moshe agree? What sense can you make out of this? So perhaps, in light of this, the understanding is that Yisro wanted that his grandchild should have the same appreciation that he has, that the religion that he's doing is not just because that's what his parents did, but because it's the truth. And I don't know if it necessarily means that he wanted Moshe to have his son test out every Avodah Zarah, but what I meant is that even if you're going to raise him Jewish and you're going to raise him with the Torah and you're going to raise him realizing that there's only one Hashem and with it, within the framework of this religion, but it shouldn't be worshipped and he shouldn't be part of that religion because that's the way you raised him. He wanted to make sure that his grandchild, that Moshe was going to give him the opportunity to make sure that he himself came to that recognition, and that when he was worshiping Hashem, that would be because of a true knowledge of Hashem, and not simply because that's the way he was raised. To look for the truth and to analyze in everything that he did, and that was really what lies central and was a central point in Yisro's life. So the Torah tells us, "Vayishma Yisro." So what did Yisro hear? So what does it mean to hear? So we mentioned earlier that we're trying to understand what was it that tipped Chazal off, that there was more to what Yisro heard than what the Torah told us. The Torah told us, Vayishma Yisro, that Hashem took Bnei Yisro out of Mitzrayim. So why does Rashi quote from Chazal, Mashmua Shamobo? What did he hear? We know what he heard. The Torah told us that he heard they came out of Mitzrayim. So why did the Mefarshim understand that there was something more to this Shmua? And perhaps the answer is that the Torah doesn't need to tell us that somebody heard something unless they heard something that actually affected them. They heard something which brought them to then act. And that's actually what Rashi says. It's not just Mashmua Shama, what did he hear? It's Mashmua Shama Uba. What did he hear? And now he came to convert, now he came to be part of the Jewish people. What was it that pushed him, that gave him the ability to hear, and not just to hear the words, but to internalize it, but to make it part of him? He came to convert. And hearing alone, just having heard, that would not have merited being included in the Torah, but it was that Yisro involved himself in it. And that this, I think, is what prompted Chazal to ask the question, Mashmua Shama Uba. Because, again, these were... If Yisro simply heard the same things that everybody else heard, then there was no reason for the Torah to mention it. These were events which were going on throughout the world. But what was it about Yisro that was different? So perhaps the answer is that these three events in particular were three events that I think Rav Eliyahu Lapian explains like this. These were three major events where the entire world heard what was going on. It wasn't something which happened just in Mitzrayim. Kriyas Yamsuf, Chazal teach us that not just the Yamsuf split, but all of the water in the entire world split at the moment of Kriyas Yamsuf. And it wasn't that they didn't know what was going on. It says, we say in the Shira, Nazyatar, Shamu Amim Yergazun, the nations of the world of the world heard what was happening, and they were scared, they were afraid. But the difference was that they all heard what was going on, and they went back to doing whatever they were doing the next day. It didn't have any roshim, it didn't make any impact on their lives. But it was Vayishma Yisro. Chazal is telling us that Yisro heard something. There was something that Yisro heard, and that he was unique. How was he unique? These were things that were heard by everybody. No, Yisro was unique because, right, it went into his heart. He was able to react to it, and it was Mashmua Shama Uba. Now he came because of what he heard. And the opinion which says that it was the Mechemes Amalei, that it was Matan Torah, the same thing is true as well. He heard that the Torah was given, so Chazal tell us that at the moment of Matan Torah, the entire world was shaking. And the Umos Ha'olam, all of the Gayim, they went to Bilam to ask Bilam, what's happening? The world is being destroyed. And Bilam said, no, the world isn't being destroyed, you don't have to be scared. Hashem is giving Bnei Yisrael the Torah, and that's what this whole ruckus is about. There also, they had the opportunity, they all heard what was happening. It wasn't something which only Bnei Yisrael were privy to. The entire world heard what was happening around them. They heard the Kolos Ubrakim, they heard all of the commotion, but they went back to what they're doing. They heard what Bilam said, and they said, oh, fine, the Torah's been given, we can go back to doing whatever we're doing now. But it was by Yishma Yisro. But Yisro heard, and it penetrated Yisro's heart. And certainly, Mechemes Amalek illustrates that point as well. Mechemes Amalek, that's exactly what the people of Amalek were doing. That's what the whole battle was about. The people of Amalek saw everything that had happened to Bnei Yisrael, and because of what happened, That was the reason they came and they said, now we need to attack. We don't want people to think that Bnei Yisrael are unique. We don't want people to think that Bnei Yisrael have some sort of special status. So they attacked just to show that it doesn't have any impact on us. Just to show that we want to, as Rashi quotes earlier, we want to cool the bath. We want to make sure that other people have the opportunity to attack Klal Yisrael. And it was these three events that were unique because the entire world heard what happened, but Yisrael was the one who heard what happened and he was able to react to it. How important is it to this ability to hear and to be not just to hear that the sounds go into our ears, but be able to be sensitive, to be able to be attentive to what's being said? How important is that? So Rav Shvadron, in his beautiful style, he answered with a mashal. He said, there was a young man who lived his entire life in the countryside. And he grew up in a home located, it was nowhere near any of the urban centers, it was in the middle of nowhere, and he had never been to a large city before. And he was used to a very simple life, on a horse and buggy, just knew the basics of life. He didn't know anything about the advances in technology, didn't know anything about any of the advances that had taken place in civilization. And he wandered out and he went out started walking towards the big city. And he came near the city and he saw a road. But he said he had never seen a road like this before. He said this road seemed to be the middle of the path. It was in the middle of nowhere. And there were iron bars on the side of the road and there were wood slats across the road. It seems like a very interesting road. Metal bars on the side, the wood slats, and he starts walking down this road. And as he's walking down, he's looking, and it goes as far as he can imagine in both directions. Looks this way, looks that way, and this road keeps going and going and going. And he wants to see where the road is going to go, so he continues walking along the road, trying to inspect closely to try and figure out where this road leads. And as he was looking and as he was examining, he heard some sort of noise. You know what this noise was? A very loud noise in the distance, and it was getting louder and louder as it was getting closer. And you heard a whistling sound and honking and a noise that didn't mean anything to him. He had no idea that he was walking on train tracks. He doesn't know what a train is. He doesn't know what anything is. He doesn't know the conductor is telling him, your life is in danger. He's pulling on the whistle, he's honking the horn, he's trying to get his attention. But the sound doesn't mean anything to him. The sound doesn't penetrate. And as such, his life is in danger and he can't react. He can't react to the sound. And that's the danger of walking through life, not being able to be attentive to what's being said, not being able to be attentive to what's happening. That there are sounds, there are things that are going on, but without having the ability or without being perceptive of what's being said, of what the message of whatever we're hearing is, we're living a very dangerous life. And that's exactly what separated Yisro from all the goyim around him. That all the other people around, they heard the events that were taking place. But Yisro was unique. It was by Yishma Yisro. Yisro heard it, and Yisro was able to internalize that lesson, and Yisro was able to respond. And perhaps this can help us understand the third opinion, the one that was missing in the first Rashi, of what Yisro heard, what we mentioned earlier. Again, Rashi just mentioned Kriyas Yamsuf and Milchemes Amalek. Rashi, no mention of Matan Torah. And the Mefarshim were already bothered trying to figure out why would it be if Matan Torah was the event which so influenced Yisro, so why did the Torah place the Parsha of Yisro prior to the Torah writing about Matan Torah? And perhaps the lesson that the Torah is trying to teach us is that this lesson of Yisro, Vayishma Yisro, the ability to hear, the ability or the fact that we need to be seeking the truth, that we need to make ourselves attentive to whatever is being said, that's a prerequisite. That has to be the introduction to Matan Torah. In order for us to be able to experience Matan Torah, in order for us to be able to to fully appreciate what the Torah has to offer, it has to come first with the Vayishma Yisro. It has to be that we're not just hearing what's going on, but that we can hear what's going on and that we can allow it to penetrate. And the Torah, by taking the parsha of Yisro hearing, and by putting that parsha specifically at the beginning, the Torah is telling us that before you come to your own Kabbalah Satorah, before you come to the time when you have the ability to accept the Torah, to be able to appreciate what the Torah is teaching you, it has to come with Vayishma Yisro. It has to come with its open heart, with the heart which is searching for the truth in Torah. And it's also a very difficult challenge. Many times when we approach Limud HaTorah and we have preconceived notions from other areas in our mind, sometimes we allow that to taint our vision and to allow whatever our hidden or open agenda might be to influence the way we understand what the Torah and what the Halakha are telling us. But what the Torah is telling us here is that no, we have the requirement not to try to put our imprint on the Torah, but to allow the Torah to put its imprint on us. And that whatever growth we can see from the Torah, whatever appreciation of Talmud Torah we ultimately can have, it has to come first with this lesson of Vayishma Yisro. And perhaps it was with this Mida, with this attribute that Yisro had, that Yisro was the only one who was able to come up with the advice for Moshe Rabbeinu. We read in the Torah that when after Yisro approached Moshe at the beginning of the Parsha, he sees that the next day everybody is coming to ask Moshe Rabbeinu questions. And Yisro says, in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayimi Macharas Vayishet Moshe Lishpot Asa'am Vayamor Am Moshe Min HaBoker Ado Erev. And the people, Moshe sat down to judge, and the people were coming for the entire day to ask Moshe questions and to bring judgments in front of them. Vayarchosei Moshe Yitzkoh Asher Oselam. He saw everything that he was doing for the people. Vayomer Ma'adavar Asher Oselam. What are you doing? Ma'adu Atoy Oshel Vadecha. Why are you sitting alone listening to every single case? And everybody's coming the entire day, for the entire course of the day, asking you questions. Now, what do you mean? They have this connection, they have questions they want to ask for Hashem, and they come to me to ask. That's my responsibility as their leader. And then Yisro says, what you're doing is not good. This isn't what you should do. Navol tibol. Said, I'm going to give you advice. You're going to become worn out. You have to have a system of judges and lower courts, and eventually it will come to you. The issues that need to come to you will come to you. But it seems like it's a very obvious solution to what seemingly seems to be a very obvious problem. It required Yisro in order to come up with this. Before this, they couldn't have thought of that. And perhaps again it was this Mida of Yisro, that Yisro was the one who, because of his pure intent, was able to question. He was able to question Moshe and say, Moshe, what are you doing? Everybody else, this is what happened, this is what they understood, this was the way of life, and they didn't have this ability to see that, you know what, we can question things. As long as we're doing it with an open mind, as long as we're doing it in a respectful way, and we're not going against anything that the Torah is saying, there's room for questions, there's room to ask. And Yisro says to him, Moshe, what are you doing? Maybe we should rethink this. And Yisro, he was the one with his pure intent and with his ability to see things in a very clear manner. He was the one who was able to come up with a solution. He was the one to question Moshe Rabbeinu, but again, with the purpose and with the ultimate goal of making things better. So that's just to summarize who Yisro was. So it seems to be that Yisro had the ability, Vayishma Yisro. Chazal understood that Yisro must have heard something else. Yisro not only heard, but Yisro heard and he came. Yisro was able to respond to what he heard, to everything that he experienced. And it was specifically Mashmua Shama Ba. Chazal were sensitive that there must have been a specific event that he heard and he heard differently. And it was, in particular, these three events that had an impact on the entire world. Kriyas Yamsuf, Mechamas Amalek, Matan Torah, things that everybody heard, that everybody experienced, but Yisro was the one who heard it in a unique way. Yisro was the one who was able to hear it and was able to respond to it. And that's because Yisro was the person who was Mefaten the Agalma Avodah Zarah. He got down in the nitty gritty, got down getting himself dirty, trying to get involved in the Avodah Zarah, trying to get himself involved in whatever religion it was, not looking for whatever felt nice spiritually, for whatever he felt was the best thing, but honestly pursuing truth. And as such, he put his all into all his pursuits. He was the Kohen Midyan, as well as being the Chosen Moshe. And all of these things were really compliment. It speaks to the godless, the greatness of Yisro, that he was this person who was able to hear the truth, he was able to see the truth, he was able to seek the truth, and he was able to rise above other people and was able to come to the Jewish people on his own because of the truth and because he had this ability to hear, and not just to hear, but to also internalize everything that he heard.